All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Joseph L. Fowley presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Thank you, Peter.
Good morning. And it appears I'm without a script. Good morning again. My name is Judge Falvey, and I'm joined remotely by Judge Greenberg this morning, and to my right, Judge Lauer. We're convened to consider the arguments in the matter of Paul Cardosa versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of the Veterans Affairs, case number 20-6380. Will counsel, beginning with the Secretary's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Your Honors. Nicholas Esterman, the Secretary, along with me today is James Townsend.
Good morning, Mr. Esterman. And for the appellant. Thank you. And if counsel are ready, we'll begin with the Secretary's counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. There is no jurisdictional hook for this appeal. The board's May 2020 letter is not a final decision of the board within the court's subject matter jurisdiction because it did not render a decision on a benefit. It did not grant or deny a benefit, and it did not adversely affect appellant. Instead, that letter informed appellant that his appeal to the board was premature because the issue of entitlement to compensation for PTSD was pending higher-level review before the agency. Stated differently, that letter did not tell appellant it would never hear his appeal, but that it would not hear his appeal right now. So the Secretary respectfully requests that this court dismiss this matter for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and I welcome the court's questions.
Mr. Esterman, you say that the letter doesn't appear to deny or grant a benefit, but doesn't relief under the statute 7104 D3 have a broader meaning than just benefit? Does benefit appear in the statute?
Do you mind? Let me just consult the statute directly. Thank you. Your Honor, you're referring to the portion that says an order granting appropriate relief or denying relief, Your Honor?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I'd actually like to walk you through the statute and find out, and I'm going to do this with Mr. Carpenter as well, find out where there's agreement among the parties and when there's not agreement. So if you've got 7104D in front of you.
Yes, Your Honor.
If we could go through specifically and see where you agree. So the first requirement, and this, of course, relates to the May 2020 letter from the VA.
Yes, sir.
The instrument, if you will, in question here. So the first requirement, of course, is that it's in writing. Is that something that the Secretary hopefully concedes that this is in writing?
Your Honor, I don't want to be difficult in this, but I'll just say that starting with D, it says each decision of the board, and I think fundamentally we disagree that this is a decision of the board because under Magid or Majid, it didn't grant or deny any benefit. But for purposes of your question, yes, the letter was in writing and addressed to appellant.
So the Secretary agrees there is a written statement from the board here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. What about the next requirement that it include findings and conclusions? Would the Secretary agree that there are findings and conclusions in that letter?
Yes, Your Honor. The May 2020 letter makes a finding that there is, the issue is pending elsewhere within the agency.
Okay, and what about the reasons or bases for that finding? Is that included in the letter?
I think that's that came to my prior answer, Your Honor, that statement would meet that as well.
Okay. And so it seems like we're left with granting or denying relief under 7104D3, which is where I started this. So explain to me how this does or doesn't deny or grant relief.
Well, Your Honor, the 10182 that preceded that letter sought to do was seek appeal or seek review by the board of the issue of entitlement to compensation for PTSD. And the letter was not attempting to grant any or deny any type of merits on that. It simply informed the veteran that his claim was pending, that the issue was pending elsewhere within the agency. And elsewhere, 5104C informs us that you cannot have concurrent election of the same review options. You can withdraw a request and change lanes at some points in time.
Okay, now I think you're treading into merits of this case, which...
I don't disagree, Your Honor.
Okay, so what we first need to address is whether the court has jurisdiction, of course.
I agree, Your Honor.
And so my colleagues may wish to go into the merits, but I'm interested in the jurisdictional issue here. And so I go back to my initial question about, isn't relief more broad than providing benefits?
I think you could read it that way, Your Honor, but then you would have to reconcile that with the Fed Circuit's decisions about what is or is not a board decision and this court's precedent as to what it is and is not decision. And as recently as the last couple of years, Clark, Dehakis, both spoke to what is and is not a decision and what this court could exercise jurisdiction over. And that was a re-endorsement of the idea that the document has to, the decision has to grant or deny a benefit. And that comes directly from the Fed Circuit's decision. And again, I believe it's Majid.
Okay, but does Majid address the 7104 issue? Did Majid go through the criteria for what is a board decision?
I don't recall, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
But just to reemphasize, our position about this letter is that it does not grant or deny any benefit, and it simply is informing the veteran that his issue is lying elsewhere. And once that concludes, then he can seek review by the board. And I believe in this case, he can still continue to seek relief from the board if he files an appeal to the board before June 2nd, so just days from now, of the pending higher level review decision.
Are you familiar with our court's more recent decision, Stiles?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Can you hear me? This is Judge Greenberg.
Yep. Faintly, Your Honor.
May I ask a question? Judge Falvey?
Certainly, Judge Greenberg.
Yeah. Counsel, do you agree that this is essentially a statutory construction matter before us? We're asked to construe the statutes rather than the application of the regulations presumably adopted in accordance with the statutes. Do you agree with that?
I agree that this matter presents a issue of statutory application of the court's subject matter jurisdiction under 7252 and 7266 and the requirement that there needs to be a final decision for the court to exercise jurisdiction.
Well, what more was intended by the letter that the VA do after the veteran received that letter?
I don't think there was any other obligation placed on VA after that letter was issued, Your Honor. It was simply to inform the veteran that the issue that he was seeking review of by the board was still pending before the agency, and that the board couldn't exercise jurisdiction at that point in time.
Why not?
Until higher level review had been completed.
And how long was that going to take?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that letter was sent in it's a May 2020 letter that we're discussing, and that higher level review decision, the initial one happened in July of 2020. So just 2 or 3 months later.
So where are we in the merits of this determination? Has the veteran been told?
Your Honor, the most recent development with respect to the issue is the May 2023 higher level review decision. And as I mentioned to Judge Lauer, the veteran has until June 2nd, 2024, if my math is right, to attempt to appeal that higher level review decision. So he has been continuously pursuing the issue of entitlement to compensation for PTSD since the June 2019 AOJ decision.
All right. That's it for me for now, to my colleague.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I apologize. I'm craning just to hear the questions. But
you're straining to hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's Judge Greenberg. It's not at your end. I think it's at this end, the audio in the courtroom. But we heard you. Do you have any other questions, Judge Greenberg?
Not at the moment.
Okay. So there's no dispute. The effective date is still pending at the agency.
Yes, Your Honor. The effective date is still in play.
And the appellant will be able to challenge that if they're not happy with how that plays out.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the letter didn't end that consideration of that issue.
No. The Secretary's position is that that issue is still live before the agency. Okay, and that letter.
So it's not something that just disappears if he has to wait.
No.
He has to wait.
Yes, Your Honor. Based on a series of strategic decisions that were made in filing a supplemental claim, seeking higher level review, and just the initial strategic decision that was made here to seek higher level review of that June 2019 AOJ decision versus any of the other options that are available to the veteran under the AMA.
Is what you're saying also that's not a? I mean, there's in a sense a decision in that letter. It perhaps is not a jurisdiction conferring decision as you've argued, but is it also your argument that it's not final in the sense that he still can challenge the effective date?
Yes, sir. And I'll be candid. I can dance around what this letter is or is not. It does make a statement as to what the board was finding, given the procedural posture of what had happened. So it makes a statement of with respect to what's going on before the agency and what the board thought it could do at that time, given that the claim is pending. But fundamentally, it is not a decision as we've historically seen this. And I think if we discussed in Kearns, it doesn't come in the format. It doesn't have the trappings of a normal board decision. And the board wasn't intending to provide any type of final decision on the issue that the veteran was seeking.
But the lacking of trappings might just be form over substance. If all the substance is there, if it was done orally almost, you could say, well, there's a final decision. They said this is the decision. They said, we order this. They said all that, and it's on the record, and they just never gave me a piece of paper that says it. That's just form over substance arguments. But how is it, though, that their merits point, whether or not they can break the rating and effective date apart and challenge them in separate lanes, how is it that they can challenge that other than challenging this decision?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, Your Honor. I don't think the court has to exercise jurisdiction over this letter just to reach that. I mean, I think that would be taking a novel position to reach a novel position. I do think those arguments could be raised in some form before the agency if the veteran is not satisfied with how that adjudication took place. And I will note that the substance of 7104C and 3.151, you know, was challenged in a 502 challenge before the Fed Circuit as well. Was never addressed because of a standing issue. So, you know, counsel for appellant was aware of our position at the time that these strategic decisions were taken, and that was a place to bring those concerns. But, you know, maybe I'm not imaginative enough about how you could bring that, but I'm sure.
Well, could Mr. Cardoso have sought a writ when he got the letter?
I don't disagree.
Asking the court to issue a writ compelling VA to allow him to continue with his NOD.
Yes, Your Honor. There was a strategic decision made to try to seek to appeal this letter rather than seeking a writ that would compel the secretary based on what's perceived to be an unlawful act. Or the 5014C concern could be addressed in the context of the merits adjudication down below. But there were at least, in the secretary's view, three avenues, one that was explored, two that have not been, that could have happened and that wouldn't place the burden on this court to decide whether or not a letter is a decision to reach that question.
So did this letter in any way terminate the benefits stream or consideration?
For this issue, in the secretary's view, no, Your Honor. The issue of entitlement to compensation for PTSD is still before the agency and has obviously evolved a little bit with the decisions that have been made over the course of the last 4 years. So we're quite a bit downstream of where we started.
If the board just says we refuse to docket this, they've got an NOD and they just said we refuse to docket this. Would that be a final decision?
In some other context, or
yes,
in the context of a
no, same other context. Just I'm trying to figure out under what circumstances would something that perhaps doesn't deny or grant benefits might fall into a final decision under our jurisdiction?
Well, to be upfront, I don't think it ever would, but it potentially could fall within your prospective jurisdiction, right, Your Honor? So if there was a letter that said we're not docketing your appeal for whatever reason or no reason at all, and the position was that that was unlawful, then a writ could be sought to compel the board to docket that appeal. And not to backtrack to Kearns, because I'm familiar with that case, but you know that was a situation where there are errors that happen in the releasing of these letters, and so they can't be fixed either by way of writ or some type of informal process. But here, you know, based on the positions we've taken, I think our position is quite clear that this is not a decision. It doesn't meet kind of the test for what is a decision that the Fed Circuit has passed down, and there are other avenues that could be pursued to try to docket this appeal.
Do we in any way need to touch the merits issue today or in a decision on your motion to dismiss?
No, Your Honor. The threshold question here is whether or not this is a decision of the board that the court can exercise jurisdiction over. And if the court agrees that that letter did not grant or deny benefits, that it didn't, didn't reach the benefit, the merits of the benefit sought, the test that the court laid out quite clearly in Clark and Dacus, as to how the court views that kind of line of case law, then no, you don't have to reach the merits.
I want to come back to Dacus in a second,
sure,
if I remember. But I was thinking the other way. If we were to say you do not prevail on your motion to dismiss, we don't need to say anything more than that, right? We say you lose, we explain why you lose, and then the matter returns to briefing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Rule 33, briefing and all that, and then the C1, C2 distinction or C3 distinction is fully briefed and
this panel or Judge Greenberg can decide that matter.
Yes, Your Honor, I don't disagree. If we lose on our motion to dismiss, which I hope we don't, Your Honor, but as we put, I think, in our second pleading, our second response to court after the motion to dismiss, we would, if we don't prevail on that, we would request full merits consideration, Rule 33, and full briefing on any other merits questions that may or may not include the 5104C question. Obviously, I can't control what the appellant brings in that.
Right. So you on your jurisdictional issue, you point to Majid and Clark more recently, Dahakis, you mentioned, and that's the one I want to ask you about, because Dahakis also talks about that it's more nuanced, I think is the language they use. It's more nuanced than a simple, was there a grant or denial of benefits? Your response?
Well, Dahakis obviously applied Clark to some extent, and Clark makes this very definitive statement that the court reaches this definitive conclusion that to take jurisdiction over an appeal from the board, there must be a grant or denial of benefits, and that the claimant must be adversely affected by that decision. And that's just a reiteration of, I think, what fundamentally is case law that's been around since Majid. So while there may be some nuance, and obviously there was a very unique argument that was made in the context of both of those cases, I think the court still would have to follow Majid to the extent that there is no fundamental grant or denial of benefits, there can be no decision.
Okay.
This letter was not an attempt to tiptoe around that. It just never sought to be a decision of the board, especially when the issue was pending elsewhere before the agency. It was just premature. So not never, just not now.
Judge Flower?
So based on the May 2020 letter, the Secretary's position is that there was no adverse decision as a result of that letter?
Well, adverse to the extent that we didn't docket the appeal, and that was a correct request that was made, but not adverse in that it was foreclosing any appeal of the – I see I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Please wrap up.
Thank you. Not adverse to the extent that the attempt to appeal the issue was foreclosed. And I think in the most recent response to the court order, appellant highlights that the relief he seeks is board review of the issue. And he still has that available to him in the Secretary's view.
Okay, thank you. I want to check with Judge Greenberg to see if he has any additional questions.
There we are.
Great, thank you.
Not at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Esterman. Mr. Carpenter?
May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Paul Cardoza. I think there is value in beginning our discussion where Judge Lauer began his discussion with the question of what the statute says at 7104. I would direct the Court's attention to the fact that 7104A entitles the veteran to the benefit of one review on appeal. That is the benefit that was denied by this letter from the board. The nuanced situation here is whether or not a letter can in fact do that, or is a decision required from the board. Put another way, can the board delegate to a clerical person, an administrator, to make decisions of the board? I think it's clear from this court's case law that it cannot. There is no way to interpret the authority of the board to make a decision other than by a board decision. Clearly, had the board made a decision in the normal way, to reject this notice of disagreement, to refuse to place it on the docket, then in fact there would have been a notice of appellate rights to take that decision for review to this court. That is part of the errors that were committed by the board in using an administrative response in the form of a letter to Mr. Cardoza to inform him that they were refusing to accept his notice of disagreement. Again, if we go to the statute says at 7104 that an appeal will be initiated by the filing of a notice of disagreement. That was what happened here. Once that was filed, there was an appeal. And that appeal cannot be disposed of by administrative fiat. It can only be legally disposed of by a decision from the board. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, how can a you seem to be arguing that this letter was ultra vires?
Absolutely.
How can it then be a final board decision under our jurisdiction?
Because it communicated an adverse disposition of his notice of disagreement. That is an adverse decision of the Board of Veterans' Appeals. They cannot hide behind the fact that this was just a letter, as they are attempting to do. I will get later on into the discussion of whether or not there is continued availability for review of the effective date. But for the purposes now just of the question of jurisdiction, Mr. Cardoza had the right, once he filed the standardized VA NOD form, to have a decision from the Board of Veterans' Appeals. He did not receive that decision. Therefore, under this court's jurisdiction, under 7261, this court has the authority to compel the secretary to act when a matter is unlawfully withheld or unreasonably delayed. Both of those circumstances appear here.
But what's our jurisdictional hook, though? You jumped to 7261 rather than through 7252. I mean, that's our jurisdictional statute.
Well,
7261 is scope.
And is this or is this not a decision that adversely affected Mr. Cardoza? It most certainly is. He filed a timely notice of disagreement.
Can you square that with Majid, Kirkpatrick?
Because those cases have to do with the examination of this court's jurisdiction to consider an issue that was not presented to the board. This goes back in time and says, no, we're going to pull the plug on your right to administrative appellate review. We're going to say administratively, not in the form of an actual decision of the board, that you do not have the right that you have under 7104A.
So it's tantamount to a dismissal by the board.
It is a categorical dismissal.
Well,
he has no remedy available other than this notice of appeal. And the suggestion that he can bring a writ to this court is absurd.
Why?
Because this court requires, under the case law for extraordinary relief, to have no alternative means of relief. And the alternative means of relief in this case is a double-edged sword. His only alternative means of relief is a notice of appeal, not to go to this court for extraordinary relief to compel the secretary to do something that they're already required to do by statute.
Well, that's a prototypical writ situation. Order the secretary to do something they're required to do.
But it seems to me it's pretty straightforward.
We've asked them for this. They've said no.
And in this case, they have not said no. They have said they refuse to accept a otherwise valid notice of disagreement under both the statute and under their own.
Wouldn't we have authority to compel them to accept it?
To me, that
wouldn't that
is
be
not,
the relief sought in a writ?
That is not an appropriate use of the writ. The writ is for extraordinary circumstances. There's nothing extraordinary when the board issues a decision that is unlawful. That decision has a right to be reviewed by this court, just as the NOD
presumes it's a decision, which is why we're here.
That is why we're here. And it is a decision, Your Honor, because it adversely affects the rights of the veteran to receive the benefit of administrative appellate review. He is entitled to one review of the decision of the secretary on the issue that he put before the board. And that issue was his right to receive a review of the effective date assigned. That is an issue within his single claim for PTSD.
Is that still pending before VA?
No, it is not, Your Honor. There is no way that that is pending before the VA. I cannot cite to you the case law off the top of my head, but I will be happy to supplement this court with a brief showing the number of times in which this court has ruled that each separate element of a claim must receive a notice of disagreement. And that's what he did. He filed a separate notice of disagreement independent of the request for higher level review on the only issue of whether or not there was the correct assignment of the rating. And that is a separate issue within the single claim, and that is expressly provided for by Congress by statute in 5104 capital C. Therefore,
if I may,
cannot be any legitimate basis to suggest that there has not been a decision made to deny him administrative appellate review.
There's a May 2023 VA completed its HLR review and denied an earlier effective date.
On a different issue. No, did not deny an earlier effective date, Your Honor. There is no decision that was subject to a higher level review. We asked for a higher level review only on the issue of rating. The higher level review. Decision that was made was in response to the April 4, 2022 decision that assigned the effective date of the rating of 70% and the TDIU rating. That was the effective date issue in that, which bears out of the question of the rating assigned. The original rating assigned was 50%. It was increased in the April 2022 decision to 70%, and IU was granted, and those effective dates for those increases were assigned at a different date, July 22, 2021, based upon that decision. And we filed a higher level review and got a decision on the denial of an effective date of the grant of TDIU, and we have since filed an NOD on that issue on May 28th, 2024. So that claim stream on the rating assigned and the effective date assigned to the rating, not to the grant of PTSD, are separate issues. And they were clearly separate issues when Mr. Cardoza filed his notice of disagreement, because none of this had happened.
So those effective dates are your... I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. Mm-hmm. The effective dates are only related to the increased ratings.
To the rating assigned, the increase from 50% to 70%.
If I may.
While the government can argue that that's a tag-along issue.
Judge Greenberg. Can you hear me? Mr. Carpenter, can you hear me? It's Judge Greenberg.
Yes.
Yeah. Before you go too far along, do you agree that we have unlimited power to at least initially interpret jurisdiction as conferred by the statute?
Yes, sir. I can agree to that, and I think that that is a correct statement of law, that there is no limitation on this court's authority to review whether it does or does not have jurisdiction based upon the action that was taken. And the action that was taken was a final decision that the board would not accept Mr. Cardoza's timely filed notice of disagreement on the issue of the effective date.
And that's what you'd like us to do. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is exactly what I'm asking the court to do.
I understand. That's all I have for the moment, Judge Fowley.
Thank you. Please continue.
Sorry, I was a little distracted there. I'd like to return to 7104 and the discussion that Judge Lauer raised at the beginning. And I have already talked about the language in 7104A, but the language in 7104D clearly makes reference to the fact that each decision of the board shall include. Now, in Mr. Cardoza's view, this court has an obligation to ensure that the Board of Veterans' Appeals issues a decision that complies with the requirements of 7104D. The decision that they issued, the letter that they sent, was not a decision. And it certainly was not a decision that complied with 7104D. And when you file a notice of disagreement in this system, you are entitled to a decision on one review of the decision by the secretary. The decision by the secretary in this case was the decision to assign the wrong effective date on the grant of service connection. The secretary has represented to this court that he still has available the opportunity to pursue that issue. I know of no basis other than the NOD that he filed that he can pursue that issue. And if this court dismisses that appeal, there is no remedy for him to attack the original decision that assigned the wrong effective date for the grant. Moving then to the text of D3, it says that...
Mr. Carpenter, I'm sorry, before you do that, there's a little bit of a housekeeping matter here that I want to clear up. So back in... back in February of 2021, the appellant moved for motion to reply to the VA's response. And then subsequently, there was a reply that the appellant submitted in response to the VA's response of February 1st, 2021. And I think this was just an oversight. It was received, but not there was no response.
Oh, I see where you're at.
So do you see where I'm going with this?
I am.
So the question for you is, are you seeking to have the March 30th, 2021 incorporated into the pleadings before the court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't have no reason why it shouldn't have been. I don't understand why it was marked.
Okay, I think that's just a housekeeping matter. But
yes, Your Honor, I believe that.
Okay, so, but in those pleadings, appellant's argument was that the May 2020 letter was a decision. That addressed this issue squarely.
Well, it is difficult to address these issues when the government takes a position that challenges the notion of a decision. I believe that's part of the nuance that was being referred to in Dehakis as to how to understand this court's jurisdiction. And I am simply pointing out that the decision is not a compliant decision, but it is a decision under 7252, which adversely affected Mr. Cardoza because he was denied the benefit of administrative appellate review by the board of a timely filed notice of disagreement. So to the extent that I am speaking both ways on the subject, I apologize, but I'm not sure that there is a way to differentiate when a decision is a decision and when a decision is not a decision. But for the purposes of this court's jurisdiction, this was a decision that adversely affected Mr. Cardoza. Mr. Cardoza filed on the standardized DA form a request for administrative appellate review, a notice of disagreement under 7104A. Someone other than the board penned a letter. That letter, for purposes of this court's jurisdiction, is a decision and was represented to the appellant as being a decision of the board, which told him he was not entitled to file that.
Well, you say someone other than the board, but isn't the signature block says that Mr. Arnold is the vice chairman of the board. So how is that someone other than the board? You're saying that the vice chairman is not?
For
the board?
In the context of communicating a decision on behalf of the board, when a motion for reconsideration or a motion to vacate is denied, you get the same kind of letter with a notice of appellate rights. We didn't get a notice of appellate rights. And then when we filed our notice of appeal to this court, we face a motion to dismiss on the basis that that really wasn't a decision. It was sort of informative.
Okay, but not... But receiving appellant rights, that goes to your point about a non-compliant decision.
And also that it is something that adversely affects the veteran. If this veteran had not been represented by counsel, this veteran very easily could have taken that letter at face value and determined that he could not, as Congress provided for, separately pursue the option of an NOD on the separate issue of the effective date that was assigned his grant of service connection.
Okay, that covers the adverse nature of the way this was conveyed to the appellant and includes presumably not docketing the board.
Correct.
But the position of the appellant is that in terms of the jurisdiction issue, the hook for this court, if you will, that
is that even if you want to call it a benefit was denied. I don't believe that the phrasing of it must be a benefit is the ultimate disposition of this question. The ultimate disposition of this question is whether or not there was an adverse decision by the board, and now in this context, that letter from the vice chairman of the board was an adverse decision telling him that even though he had filed a timely NOD, somehow they were unwilling to accept that and were telling him that they would not accept it. That was a decision of the board which adversely affected him and by which implicated this court's jurisdiction under 7252.
Okay.
7266, I'm sorry.
I'd like to ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Esterman with respect to the use in the statute 7104D3 of relief and whether or not that is broader than the meaning of benefit. I understand your argument about, how...
And we believe that it is, and we believe that relief in this context was the right to receive a board decision based upon one review of the decision of the secretary to assign an effective date, not on the decision of the appellant to file a notice of disagreement. The board does not have the authority to reach that decision in a preliminary correspondence. They very well may write a decision that complies with 7104D that explains their reasons and bases for why he was not entitled to. But they would have to do so in conformity with 7104D, which obviously this decision is not. And the ultimate question, the merits question, is whether or not Mr. Cardoza does or does not have the right to a board decision on effective date. And to address an issue that was raised before the government as to whether or not this court has to reach the merits, I'm not sure this court can avoid the disposition of this motion to dismiss without reaching the merits, to the extent that this court interprets the language used by Congress in Section 5104, capital C, small a, D, capital C, which unambiguously provides, nothing in this subsection shall prohibit a claimant from taking different actions set forth in paragraph 1 with respect to different claims or different issues contained within a claim. The undebatable facts of this case are one claim. That one claim spawned two issues. He took higher level review on the rating, and he took an NOD on the effective date. That is exactly what Congress said that he had the option to do. This court
That's your merits argument, though.
I believe that's also an inextricably intertwined.
But we don't need to get to that, do we?
I disagree, Your Honor.
We don't need to get to it today and on this motion to dismiss. If we deny the motion to dismiss, then it goes to briefing, a Rule 33 conference, and then briefing. And then if there remains a dispute, the court can take it up. But we don't need to reach it to answer the motion to dismiss question, do we?
I believe you do, Your Honor.
How?
Or
why?
Well, the why is because the motion to dismiss says this court does not have jurisdiction. In order to deny the motion, this court has to say it has jurisdiction. And I believe the only way that this court can say that it has jurisdiction
If we followed your argument, we would just say, yes, we have jurisdiction because he's been denied a benefit, which is the right to a hearing on his NOD. And therefore.
But the basis of the government's argument is that he doesn't have that right as a matter of law. And therefore,
well, isn't it more accurately that he's entitled to a board decision on whether or not he's entitled to or he's allowed to bifurcate his claim into two issues?
No, Your Honor, because there's been no decision.
Don't we need a board decision on that?
Well, ultimately, I believe you do in the facts of this case.
Right.
But the appeal was taken. The request for administrative appellate review, the one decision of the secretary requesting to be reviewed, was the decision to deny an effective date earlier than the effective date assigned. That's the matter under appellate consideration. Yes, the board,
that's
when
under
it makes
consideration,
that decision,
that's, if you win, that would be under consideration at the board, not here.
But
we need the board to weigh in on that, don't we?
Yes, you do, Your Honor. Yes, you do.
So we would just,
but
today,
my view,
if you were to prevail, deny the motion to dismiss, and then if you prevail on the merits,
before either Judge Greenberg as a single judge or this panel, then it would be sent back for the board to give you a decision, right?
What you say is correct with this qualification, that I do not believe that a single judge can answer the question on appeal,
right,
if the government continues to persist, as I'm confident they will, to argue that there isn't a statutory right to file an NOD on a separate issue within a claim.
So you would be content with us today saying the motion to dismiss is denied and Mr. Carpenter, the appellant, is wrong on what 2A and 2C say, and you can't split it like this. With no further briefing, no argument on the merits, just that we issue an order today saying motion to dismiss, and by the way, the administrative fiat of Mr. Arnold was correct. You don't want us to do that.
No, I most certainly do not.
Right.
But what I do...
Because you said in your pleadings that if 2A says what the Secretary says it says, then you lose.
And I believe that that is correct.
So you don't want us to get to the merits unless getting to the merits causes you to win.
Your Honor, I am defending a motion to dismiss that was brought by the government on specious grounds. These grounds have no basis in the facts.
I wouldn't say citing Majid or Kirkpatrick was specious.
No, I mean, that's not specious, but is specious
that's
to suggest that
argument.
The statute is trumped by their regulation that they hide behind to say that you cannot do this. And their regulation, to the extent that it says that, is invalid. So that is disingenuous, Your Honor, to present a motion to dismiss to this court to deny Mr. Cardoza a judicial review of the denial of administrative appellate review. That simply is not fair. This is supposed to be a fair process, a level playing field. That's not fair to do that and then not at least get a decision from this court that the grounds upon which the Secretary's motion to dismiss are not considered sufficient to prevail in the motion to dismiss. That needs to be there, and I don't think you can go there unless you interpret the text of the statute to permit the NOD that was filed. Because otherwise, you have to accept the government's assertion that he does not have the right. Congress gave him that right. And this court needs to enforce that right. I see that I've extended beyond my time.
May I have a question? Judge Fowley, I have a question for Mr. Carpenter. What precisely is the order you wish the court to enter today or after due consideration?
The order that I would ask this court to issue is an order that dismisses the Secretary's motion to dismiss and orders the matter to proceed to briefing on the question of whether or not the veteran, Mr. Cardoza, has the statutory right to file a notice of disagreement on the effective date issue within his claim for PTSD.
So you don't want us to get into the merits?
To me, that gets into the merits, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
You said you wanted to go to full briefing.
And it needs to go to full briefing because a panel needs to address that decision.
How can we pre-decide? Maybe I'm not understanding here. I apologize if I'm not. Okay.
I
asked you if we need
you,
to get
Honor.
Into the merits or we just need Probably to me. Resolve the jurisdictional question here today. You said, no, we need to get into the merits. And we argued about it. You called them disingenuous. You said they were making specious arguments, the unfairness, all this stuff. If we didn't, Judge Greenberg says, what do you want the order to say? And you say, I want it to say the motion to dismiss is denied. Go to full briefing. I agree if that's what you – if it, not with the jurisdictional point, but I agree that that's the – we need to decide that and then send you to full briefing.
And I'm simply saying to this court that I don't know – I cannot, on behalf of my client, not advocate for recognition by the order of disposition of this motion to dismiss that the government's motion to dismiss does not have a basis in the statute unless that is correct. And there's been no authoritative source interpreting that. So I hope that I am clear that Mr. Cardoza has now had to go out to the additional expense of defending a motion to dismiss with substantial pleadings, no record, and oral argument that deals with a question that is the elephant in the living room. That elephant needs to be addressed at least to the extent that the Secretary's motion to dismiss cannot be sustained without an interpretation of that. And to that extent, this court has to address the meaning of the statute. Otherwise, this court...
Judge Lauer, any questions?
And by the statute, you mean 5104C?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Esterman?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a handful of points. To speak to the conversation you had, Judge Falvey, with my colleague, if the court was to deny our motion to dismiss here, I don't disagree that we would get to the merits and we should go through Rule 33 stage and briefing, but I don't think we would even reach the question of 5104C because this letter wouldn't comply with 7104. And so I think there would be warranted for a remand just to get a actual compliant decision, if it is a decision. So I think 5104C, even with the denial of the motion to dismiss, is pretty downstream of anything we're talking about here today. With 7104 in mind, to Judge Lauer's earlier question about kind of the functioning of that statute, I just want to reemphasize that 7104A speaks to the idea of what is a final decision, and then D then talks about each decision. And if I recall Kirkpatrick correctly, which we cited in our response to the court's February 1st, 2021 order at page 1-2, explained that the Fed Circuit's definition of Majid was consistent with then 7104D2, which is now 7104D3. So the idea of issue in the context of decision is consistent with kind of our position here. The other comment I wanted to make is that, you know, my colleague's position here is that earlier effective date won't be addressed in any merits determination for the agency. If it's not addressed, then that's error, and that would be a basis to appeal to the board. I know that there was a mention of a May 28th, 2024 NOD filed. I didn't see that in our electronic system this morning, so I can't speak to that. But if that's the case and that's on the issue of PTSD, then the question of early effective date should be raised in that context. Another comment I wanted to make is that whether this is legacy or AMA, if an appeal was premature, we let somebody know. If you filed a VA Form 9 before an SOC had been issued in the legacy system, if you filed here a request for board review while the higher level review was pending, we let you know. And that's what the board was seeking to do here. As I mentioned in the Kearns case, those duties have just shifted from the regional office to the board at this point. And I guess on that point as well, and to Judge Lauer's comment about the vice chairman signing this letter, that was in an administrative function. And the vice chairman also signs denials of motions for reconsideration. That doesn't make that a decision for purposes of this court's jurisdiction, except in very limited circumstances.
Why not?
So there's a number of documents.
Why not? Why isn't that signature alone evidence that somebody has addressed it on the merits? Or are you just saying the secretary rubber stamps papers that are brought to them? That's a very high position to sign that letter without some substantive review, isn't it?
Your Honor, my point is just that the vice chairman wears both, is a VLJ, but in this capacity was operating an administrative function, and he also signs denials of motions for reconsideration, which are also not within this court's jurisdiction under, except for under, you know, limited circumstances.
Well,
so
did
just
he
to highlight
it
that
on the merits before he signed it?
Your Honor, I don't know. I've not had a chance to speak to the vice chairman about this.
What is the standard operating procedure of the secretary when it comes to matters of this sort? The thousands of these letters go out to veterans. They're not knowledgeable about your procedures, let alone the statute. So what is it that he did, if anything?
Your Honor, unlike in Kearns, I haven't had a chance to consult with the board about the mechanics of how these letters are issued, but I suspect this is also going through the intake office with those initial kind of determinations with respect to timeliness and a review of VBMS to see whether, you know, an issue was pending elsewhere like it was here, and then, you know, a form letter being submitted. And I'll just highlight, I don't know what the current form of these letters are, but this is, just like in Kearns, a very early early form of these letters as we began to process AMA appeals for the first time.
Thank you.
Mr. Esterman, I have a question about the Federal Circuit's decision in Bean. And in Bean, the Federal Circuit said that when a claim is adequately presented to the board but not addressed, the board's disposition of the appeal is a decision of the board on that claim that may be appealed to the court. So how do you square that with saying that this letter here, the May 2020 letter disposing of this appeal, isn't something that this court can review?
Well, I think you can cabin Bean a little bit in the context that it was, in, if I recall correctly, in the context of whether it was a reasonably raised claim that was adjudicated by the board by silence, and whether there was a jurisdiction over that. And I think that's very different than what we have here. And as I highlighted earlier, the letter we have here is not saying that the board is never going to review the issue of entitlement to compensation for PTSD. It's just simply saying that that issue is pending elsewhere. And so once that happens, and not to speak too much to the merits, but then the statute says then you can seek another form of review, which may be if the veteran elected board review, and then that issue can be determined. So I think the context of Bean is slightly different in that, you know, here we don't have any type of reasonably raised question. It's there was an explicit request for review based on appellant's view that these elements could be bifurcated, and the board was not rejecting consideration of the merits of that. It just was saying, not now.
I mean, could you make the other argument saying that, unlike in Bean here, explicitly the appellant was disagreeing with the effective date, explicitly stating? I mean, that's the flip side of you're trying to distinguish, and I think the term used is cabin bean, but couldn't you make the other argument just as easily?
I don't disagree, Your Honor. You could read this letter as rejecting the or somehow denying the earlier effective date component, but as I think I've said it a few times, our position is that that earlier effective date question is still live and can be pursued before the agency, and if we don't do that, then please appeal and allege error in that regard. I don't think this letter was ever intending to deny earlier effective date on the merits, either explicitly or implicitly. It was just saying, not to say it again, but just not now, not never, not now. If there are no further questions.
Judge Greenberg?
No, I'm fine.
Nothing.
Just one briefly, if you could respond to Mr. Carpenter's, this would be a denial of one review on appeal.
Well, Your Honor, I think that we had this discussion in Kearns as well, that this would be the initial, if that was a denial, this would be the initial kind of determination as to whether that 10182 was valid, and then there should be another determination by the board that would be that review on appeal that then would put us within the scope of this court's jurisdiction. But that's obviously kind of building this up into something more than just what it is, the letter, letting the veteran know that his claim is pending, his issue is pending elsewhere.
All right. No further questions? This case is submitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All rise.